Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of February, recording at 9:13 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'll start as I usually do with just a quick review of the week. Stock markets, well, generally firm overall. A notable exception was Japan, which has come down fairly sharply recently, albeit not all that surprising given the strong gains that it had seen previously. Elsewhere, government bonds a little bit steadier in here now, and that's important because some of them were testing important support levels. So bond prices a bit firmer. The U.S. dollar, now this does look as if the rally, quite a good rally that we've seen over the last month, is beginning to run out of steam. We have some definite dollar weakness in here today, although not against the yen, which really remains the carry trade currency of choice, given its almost negligible interest rate. In precious metals, some sign of firming, quite good evidence actually, over the last couple of days here. So we may have the bulls gaining the upper hand. It looks like the bulls are beginning to gain the upper hand once again. We're also seeing some of that in the industrial metals, although it may take more time with the ones where we had seen very, very big runs on the upside. Crude oil, this could be important. We had a bit of climactic action this week in terms of the sell-off of crude oil and also some other contracts. I mean, natural gas has been weak for quite some time. It's beginning to lose downside momentum. No upward dynamic, which is what it really needs. But we had a very powerful upward dynamic in gasoline today, and that had had one of the more climactic looking declines. So up $9 here today on the March contract for gasoline, taking it up above 150 once again, and it had a reasonably good day yesterday as well. So that's certainly broken the short-term downtrend. So I think the petroleum complex may be bottoming out at these levels, but albeit within what has been what remains a medium-term correction. Okay, more on that later. So let's get back to these stock markets, and I'm unrepentant in here, despite getting passionate emails about the Dow breaking above the 1100 level. That is a potentially important technical signal, but have a look also at the utilities index. That will be posted a little later on in comment of the day, and I regard utilities as an important lead indicator for the U.S. stock market. It certainly has been in the past. So, but you know, I don't rationalize chart action. The Dow breaks above 1100, and that generates a certain amount of excitement. And it does open the door to some further gains, but it's really got to hold that move. It held it in here today, although we just had very small declines on Wall Street today. But overall, I maintain that this 34-month-old global stock market rally is very long in the tooth, and that we have commenced the topping process. Not for all the indices. European indices, for the most part, are still edging higher. And I emphasize commenced the topping out process, which really could take a number of weeks, perhaps even longer. Now, why might that be the case? And the reasons are that, first, although I think the oil complex is now closer to a low than a high, or that it will firm from here, better way to phrase it, that certainly oil is not the worry that it was when it was testing the Katrina highs. That's one factor. Also, what we can say that long-term government bond yields have not backed up that much, so that's not a they have not become a headwind here for global stock markets. Actually, oil, we'll go back to that for a moment, had been a tailwind here recently as the price was coming down. And then a number of those metal markets are off the boil here in what are, I suspect, medium-term consolidations for a number of them. And so that has, I think, helped to calm nerves a little bit further, or be reassuring for equity bulls overall. But stock markets have discounted a lot of good news in this terrific 34-month rally that we have seen from the March lows of 2003. And why should we get this rally running out of steam here? Well, as you know, rallies of that duration, unmarked by corrections of 10% or more, are relatively unusual. It's unusual to see them go beyond the three-year period. That would be one reason. Another reason would be the second year of the U.S. presidential election cycle, 2006 in this case, is historically the least bullish year of the four-year presidential election cycle. No reason why Wall Street has to conform to that average historic pattern, of course, but nevertheless, I don't want to ignore it either. Then we have the very real factor of rising short-term interest rates, and I think we're going to get a couple of more hikes here by the Fed, unless something starts to go wrong very quickly with Wall Street, and there's no evidence of that taking place here this week. Many people have been saying that they thought the rates would only go up to 4.75. My hunch is that the way these things work, it's not intellectually or analytically complicated, but my hunch is that the Fed governors had pretty well set their sights on 5% and Greenspan before he retired, and all the others quite some time ago. And for the simple reason that, but very human reason, that people don't say, if they've commenced a long-term period or lengthy process of interest rate increases, they're not saying, well, let's take it up to 4.75% on the federal funds rate. And they'll pick round numbers, say 5%. And that's the level I think that they've been looking for all along. And then to reassess, if the economy were booming, then rates would go 5.25, 5.5%, or whatever. But if the economy is just reasonably steady, let alone slowing, then they would be much more tempted to pause at the 5% level. So we haven't finished the interest rate hikes, and that has got to be short-term rates going up in the United States has got to be a bit of a headwind for the stock market, and I think that's been reflected by the not so great performance that we've seen on saw on Wall Street last year, and again so far this year, despite the Dow pushing up to its the highest level in a number of years. And then on the valuations aren't as overbought as they were previously, but they're no bargain either. And if we take, for instance, the S&P index, and let's see what Bloomberg is saying on that right now. It's got it on a price earnings ratio of 18 and a dividend yield of 1.78%. Well, that's a lot better than it was a few years ago, but that's not cheap. And you can find some markets in Asia, a number of markets in Asia, where, well, take Thailand, for instance, one that I do like, where you have a PE ratio just a little over 10 and a yield of 3.5%. And yields of that magnitude are not all that unusual. So that does concern me a bit here in the medium term. So all along, I've been looking for this medium term correction in 2006, and I had really singled out the second and third quarters as probably the greater danger period. And my best case scenario, ever since the October reaction lows, when we got those upward dynamics indicating that stock markets were bottoming out, was that we could see this rally continue on through the, or well into at least, the first quarter of this year. And so it's still on track to do that. Now, again, there are plenty of bulls about who do not share my concern for this correction. And what might work in their favor? Well, I think the biggest factor overall is all the liquidity that's sloshing around in the system. Now, in tactically, I haven't touched any of my investment positions in recent months, with one exception there, that I had halved a position that had done extremely well for me in Ballarat Gold. That's the Australian gold mining share. And I then watched and waited for a while, but then couldn't resist putting that money into the Atlantis China Fortune Fund, which fortunately has been going up a bit, and Ballarat's kept going up as well. I just took that position out because I felt that Ballarat was a little bit more speculative, and it had done so well that as some gold shares have, that it had become a bigger proportion of my overall fund than I wish to hold. So I took a more conservative policy on that. I have cut back a lot in my speculative positions, though, as you may recall. So definitely taking a more cautious view. And my biggest fear in that is that we could see, are likely to see at some stage this year, a cascade effect where we get stock markets falling, and that would certainly require the Dow coming back below 11,000. I don't think we would get any big decline in stock markets without Wall Street turning downwards, and given the Wall Street leash effect that I've talked about so often. And that would cause many of the hedge fund managers and other big traders and speculators in the markets who have been borrowing yen and driving up stock markets, but they've also the same people who have been bidding up a good many other markets, not least the metals sector, resources in general. So that if people became more cautious, that you could have a general swing into cash for a portion of their portfolios, and that would create downward pressure on markets, and then that would start to create some economic concerns among analysts. And that I feel is a better than 50-50 chance. That's my conservative approach. Okay, in terms of the big themes that I like the most, they're all overextended here right now. My favorite stock market for the very long term, if I could only invest in one stock market, it would be India. Fortunately, I don't have that limitation, but I just say that to emphasize my long-term bullishness. But India is on a valuation similar to Wall Street. So, and a lot of people are looking at India and saying, well, this is a bit frothy here. This has gone too far. Though interestingly, they far fewer of them saying that about Wall Street right now. But so India is it's certainly no bubble, but it's not it's nowhere near as cheap as it was, and it would hardly be surprising if India saw a medium-term correction. And Japan, I certainly like the Japanese market, and a co-favorite with Japan among the developed country industrialized nation stock markets would be South Korea. But they're both off the boil after having phenomenal years last year. So it's hardly surprising that we would see medium-term corrections there. Then in the resources markets, Australia, Canada, South Africa, have certainly seen a loss of momentum. They haven't seen the type of ending signals that we've seen in Japan, though. They've come down quite gradually, so they may actually retest those highs and go a bit higher. I'm not sure about that, but I could envisage that happening without too much difficulty. But overall, a little bit more choppy action, loss of momentum, as just suggesting to me that we have commenced what is a topping out process that will involve plenty of ranging and then eventually a shakeout at some point in that second quarter and third quarter, and then I feel that that will create an excellent buying opportunity. Well, where will I want to buy? Once again, well, emerging markets are one of my two big themes. I'm in here for the very long term. Now, I would be a little bit influenced by the degree of sell-off that we saw. In other words, the object of the game is to buy low and sell high. So that would be a factor, but I would be absolutely delighted to buy more India on a good sell-off. And then I would almost certainly go in and buy some of the funds that invest in a range of Asian markets. I wouldn't touch these in here right now because I expect the correction. But funds that spread the risk a little bit more widely rather than concentrating on one stock market. I may well buy more of the Atlantis China Fortune Fund. I may well buy a Taiwan specific fund because these haven't done all that well in the last few years, but have the big base formations that I like, and I do feel that the buy signal that we get later this year, if we get that correction, will then be followed by quite a strong period through 2007 and 2008, at least. And I feel that it would take a major event to derail that prospect. And if that were to happen, I think that the most likely major event, and I'm not forecasting this, but one has to be aware of the risks, but it would be a bird flu related situation. There's, if you follow this in the papers, there's certainly here in Europe at any rate, there's little doubt that we have seen a further spreading of the bird flu problem. And we all keep our fingers crossed and hope that this does not turn into any type of pandemic. And my guess, and obviously it can only be a seat of the pants guess, and it's more a hope than a guess, is that it won't. But that's the type of factor. When I say that I think that if we get a reaction low in here this year, that markets really could do quite well overall throughout 2007, talking about stock markets, 2008, it would, as I say, take a major event, I think, to negate that possibility. And one of the factors that I think would be behind that very strong market, again, would be the considerable amount of liquidity that's sloshing around in the system. And while that liquidity is creating inflation pressures, these are primarily asset inflation pressures. And the central banks have obviously indicated they're not going to worry about that as much as CPI inflation. Now, I think CPI inflation is creatively measured to favor governments overall. But you wouldn't expect anything less than that, would you? But certainly, while China remains the global manufacturing center, and there's a huge amount of competition in manufacturing, then that is going to help keep prices down, actually create deflationary pockets within what I feel is a long-term inflationary cycle that's developing. But there won't be enough inflation to create a serious headwind for stock markets, and central banks won't be ramping up interest rates, which would be very bad for stock markets. And I think That interest rates are still really quite accommodative. So that's my optimism over that period. And again, I said emerging markets would certainly remain one of my very, very big themes in here. And markets such as Brazil and Mexico in the Central and South American region. I mean, Brazil is fascinating. I think Brazil is going to be the Saudi Arabia in terms of ethanol production, and I think that's an exciting story overall. And I may have some of those ethanol shares following a reasonable shakeout. So in terms of stock markets and that big theme, I will prefer the Asian emerging markets to most other emerging markets. They may not perform more strongly. They didn't, for instance, over the last 3 years. I mean, you had the petrocurrency markets, the Middle Eastern stock markets, but that's the closest thing we get to a genuine bubble in here. I can see that going on inflating for a number of years more, in line with generally firm oil prices, but that's not something that I'm really inclined to play. In the trade-off between risk and reward, I want the what I feel at any rate is the greater safety that we have in those Asian markets. And my goodness, we've seen some spectacular gains, haven't we? And I think we will see more. And so I'm keen to add a little bit more. And as you may recall, anybody but the newest subscribers will know I've been building up additional cash, which has come mainly from my trading account that I will look forward to investing in stock markets. My other big theme is resources, industrial resources. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is all over. I've received a number of reports from subscribers to that effect. I'll publish a little bit more on that next week. I like to put both sides of the argument before subscribers, if they're arguments that are well argued in substantial reports. But I feel really that this China-led demand for industrial resources is going to go on and on and on and on. It was interesting. I asked Yang Liu about that. She's the fund manager of the Atlantis Group China funds. There are two China funds, and I had a long meeting with her yesterday, and I asked her about that resources demand, and she says she sees it continuing to be very strong, rising, not just leveling, plateauing, but continuing to rise every year, more or less in perpetuity. And that would not surprise me at all. And of course, it's not just China that's after all these resources, consuming increasing consumption of all these resources. You've got India and all the other developing countries, and of course, the developed countries are still using plenty of industrial resources. So I can see that theme running and running and running. But that said, I do feel that the industrial metals, well, some of them at any rate, and let's be specific, copper, maybe zinc, most of all, lead, aluminium, these have run ahead to such a degree that it would hardly be surprising if we had a lengthy medium-term correction. What's a lengthy medium-term correction? That could be a couple of years. But taking place within the overall secular bull market and taking place with prices showing an average range, which would be above what most analysts have been forecasting for these metals. So I do like this resources area. And given a decent pullback, I would quite happily add to my core favorites, and there are three of them. There is Rio Tinto. There is BHP Billiton, and there is Inco. And so I do expect over the next 6 to 9 months to increase my positions in those shares. Gold, I think gold's going much higher over the long term. I think all the precious metals are going much higher over the long term. I don't think we'll see a very lengthy medium-term correction for gold. One reason is that that's what we had. We had about an 18-month consolidation, which ended in September of last year. Now, we're currently in what I would regard as being a shorter medium-term correction, which is taking place right now, and I think that lasts for a few months. Whereas the industrial metals that I mentioned a moment ago could see a much more lengthy correction, just as crude oil is seeing a much more lengthy correction. But I still maintain that despite this pullback that we have seen in the last month or so, I still maintain that we're very likely to see new highs, a new all-time numerical highs at any rate, for crude oil. Again, this theme that I have pushed so strongly and advocated so strongly, I should say, over the last 3 years of supply inelasticity meets rising demand. Supply is increasing, but not as fast as people had forecast because of shortages, because of costs, a little caution by the industry, and scarcity, it must be said. As well, particularly scarcity for metals such as zinc and copper. So it's not all that easy to ramp up production, and the demand is growing, and in my opinion, will continue to grow in excess of the production increases. So companies like Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton, it's just like owning a mining fund. And I'm certainly keen to have my energy investments playing that Guinness, the Guinness Atkinson is the U.S. one. These are the funds managed by Timothy Guinness, and in the U.K. we have the London listed Investec Global Energy Fund, and then there's the original one, which is the Guernsey registered version of that. That's a dollar denominated version. I have positions in two of those. So those are core positions that I wouldn't mind adding to, given a reasonable setback, which we may well see. Now, I don't like government bonds. I think that first, all the debt that governments are running up, I think the inflation pressures that will inevitably build from all the money printing that has taken place, not just by the US, which has printed trillions, but by all central banks. And that is not a healthy long-term environment for government bonds. Government bonds, in my view, as I've stated repeatedly, ended a secular, about 18-year-long bull market in June of 2003. And I feel that government bond prices are in a lengthy topping out process. In other words, government bond yields in a lengthy bottoming out process. And that the big move will be upwards, and Japanese long-dated government bonds yields will see one of the biggest rises because they're starting from the lowest floor level and currently show a more advanced stage of overall base development. So I don't like this area, long-term government bonds. I think they're actually quite dangerous, and I'll be more interested in shorting opportunities than in buying opportunities, but I'm quite content to do nothing here right now. And last but not least, in terms of currency markets, now we've been in a period where currency markets have been mostly ranging, and in the global beauty contest, when we look at the world's markets and say, well, what do I want to do? Do I want to be in commodities, or do I want to have stock market plays or fixed interest plays, currency trades or investments? If it's choppy and rangy, then it doesn't qualify in terms of the international beauty contest. So I want to go for opportunities that I think are clearly outstanding. We will probably get a dollar selling opportunity that will be outstanding in terms of the US dollar index going from its current level around 91 down back down to around 80. I think that's likely to happen, but it may not happen until shortly before, or it may not start to move down until shortly before the Fed signals that it's just about finished with the rate hikes. And certainly, and to get back down to 80, we would need to see lower U.S. interest rates, almost certainly in my in my view. But basically, no country wants a strong currency. That's the precious metal story. So if you want a hard currency, you have gold and other precious metals, in my view. They're gradually being remonetized in the eyes of investors, as I've said for the last 3 or 4 years, and well, not so gradual more recently in the last year. Many people, well, from September onwards, many more people sat up and took notice of this change, big change in investment sentiment. If we get any significant moves in currencies on the upside generally, I suspect that some of the Asian currencies would be to the fore. That could be, for instance, the Singapore dollar as an example. Now, as we know, Asian countries rather have been trying to keep their currencies down, but from time to time they'll back away from that policy because they feel that it might be a bit inflationary, or they feel that their economies can actually withstand a rise in the currency, and that there will be some benefits, such as the oil import bill goes down and so on. And they'll allow them to strengthen for a while. And of course, then international currency traders are going to jump on that trend, and it's going to push it too far, and then the governments will get concerned and start chopping interest rates, start intervening again. But I think where we get those windows of opportunity on the upside this year, that they're more likely to be in some of the Asian currencies, and I've singled out one that I would put high on that list in terms of being the Singapore dollar. And folks, so I don't go on all night, and then I won't get to post comment of the day tonight, and I want to do that. I'd better wrap it up here, just to say that's my review for another week, and have an absolutely splendid weekend. Don't miss some of those exciting Olympics. All the best.